across the galaxy and into your dwelling. It's the Smuggler's Dispatch, a podcast that explores every corner of the Star Wars universe.
No. Don't take them. No, not the patty frog legs or the biscuits. Oh.
Al is having another night terror. Goodness gracious, I thought he grew out of that.
I'll go wake him up. Hey, Al, wake up, you're on the Raven. Everything is fine.
Mr. Opok, with the blast shield down, I can't see anything.
Oh, not this Master Opok thing again. This is the fifth time this month he's woken me up talking in his sleep about Master Opok.
But Master, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid neither Michael nor I will be able to get any rest if this keeps up. Now, I know organics traditionally aren't supposed to be woken during one of these corrupted reboot cycles you like to call a nightmare, but we really do need to get some peace and quiet. Alex!
Where am I? Oh, what time is it? Who are you? Master? Is that you?
Oh, boy. Let's get you up.
Michael, I can't see. Oh, I must have hibernation sickness.
No, you dingus. That's just your Gungan sleep mask. Here.
Stars, I was just having the most vivid dream.
Let me guess, you were being visited by a Master Jedi?
Master Opok Chromoshay, how did you know?
Because you've been talking in your sleep every night.
Oh, sorry about that.
I do find it interesting that you consistently have the same dream about the same Jedi Master ever since you left the Halcyon.
Though Saja did a number on you.
Michael, I think it goes deeper than my experience with the Saja. You know, ever since they opened a door somewhere within me to explore the possibility of being connected to the Force in a deeper way, I've been being visited by what I can only describe as a ghostly presence.
Sounds like too many Meluron milksuds to me.
Oh, but it's just too real, though.
So, this Master Opok, you really think you're communing with him? And if he's a ghostly presence, doesn't that mean he's, dead?
Well, I never thought of that, but I guess so. Yeah, and now I'm terrified. Great. I'm never gonna fall back asleep again.
This reminds me of a connection in the Force that I've heard of before.
And what connection would that be?
The connection between a great Jedi Master and his young apprentice. Hey, maybe we should clear your mind and make a transmission about this very topic. It'll be a therapeutic auditory back-to-bath for you.
Yeah, I think I'd like that. Let's do it.
The link is secure, and you're going live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Smuggler's Dispatch, a podcast where we explore every corner of the Star Wars galaxy, one topic at a time. Today, we are talking about potentially the greatest Jedi of all time, Qui-Gon Jinn.
I like it. I also love that we didn't even feel the need to introduce ourselves, Michael, that we are just so into it. That people just know. People should know who we are by now.
I'm Michael Howarth, and that's Alex Stewart.
Hi, everybody. We're talking about Qui-Gon Jinn today.
Indeed, we are. We're gonna be talking about how the character came about, his value in addition to Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. We're also gonna be poring over who he was as a Jedi within the world of Star Wars. Let's talk about Qui-Gon. Let's talk about Qui-Gon Jinn. Let's talk about...
Is that like an official song, or did you just come up with that?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, like, you and me, baby. Let's talk about... Who is that, Salt and Peppa? I tried to pull an owl.
Never heard that song. Yeah, but well, no, look, we're reversing roles.
I am completely
clueless about this song.
I did a bad job.
Mission accomplished. I need to look this song up. The Salt and Pepper. The Salt and Pepper
Salt
Band.
Salt and Peppa.
Salt and Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Oh, Peppa. Peppa Pig?
Exactly.
I'm definitely on board with that. You down with Peppa Pig? Yeah, you know Big.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah. Let's talk about Qui-Gon. One of my favorites. Michael,
no, we're talking about
Peppa Pig. Tell us a little, like, let's get be. Oh, so on this episode, we're going to be talking about the deep-seated history and intense story behind the creation of Peppa Pig. And I can't actually follow through with that because I don't know anything else about Peppa Pig.
Yeah.
This has officially gone off the rails. Listeners, you have to understand that Michael and I have not spoken really more than just a few words of dialogue to one another in like the last 3 weeks. And when that happens, the dam bursts.
Exactly.
Like the dam is open and the entire valley is flooded with us just being chatterboxes and trying to get our goofs out with each
Rekindled
other.
Rekindled conversation. Getting our goofs out. Oh, man. Okay.
So I want us to talk, Michael. I love Qui-Gon Jinn. I love the QGJ. And I don't know much about my bro Qui.
Yeah.
And so I want you to start by kind of telling me, like, I'm a fan of learning about the origins of these characters out of universe. So what is the origin behind one of our favorite characters in Star Wars, Qui-Gon Jinn?
Absolutely. Yeah, he's kind of a mysterious guy. And, you know, there's not a whole lot we know about him when he was a youngster. But if we're talking about his character's creation, I was looking up some things related to his name. Because the name, like, Qui-Gon Jinn, it feels like it's definitely coming from something that already exists. So I looked up a few things around Taoism and Buddhism, since those were some of the big influences on the Force and the Jedi in the first place. And there's this thing called Qui-Gong, or Qi-Gong. It's Qi-Gong. Or like you heard about like the Qi energy. I think it's like the same spelling, the Qi, or the Qi charger for your wireless cell phone.
I love the seeds. I love chia seeds.
Chia seeds. So
spread them on water and watch them grow.
So the Qui-Gong or the Qigong from Chinese philosophy, it's a Taoist and Buddhist practice for working towards self-enlightenment. And it has to do with aligning your breath, your movement, and awareness. And it has to do with some of martial arts, things like that. And again, comes from Taoism. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the influence, is that word or that idea. And then Jinn, J-I-N-N, is of course a spirit or an entity that's from Arabic mythology. So you're already starting to get some previews as to like who this character is, about him becoming he's force shadowed, exactly, as the first Force ghost.
Oh, bro. The thing that I find is interesting here that you bring up is this alignment of breath, movement, and awareness. And one of the things that you see is right before the duel of the fates, right when Qui-Gon gets the old in the gut, you see that he takes that moment to center himself and align his breath and movement. So he's literally living up to his name in that way. I love that.
Dude,
I didn't know any of that. That's great.
Yeah, I didn't know either. And doing some digging. And, you know, I mean, this isn't for sure. This is kind of just some things I looked into that seem like they probably influence some of this. But the Jinn being a spirit, I definitely don't think that's a coincidence. So that's where his name comes from a behind-the-scenes character. And, you know, obviously George Lucas brought this character of Qui-Gon Jinn into the story to kind of be an older, wise, sage father figure for our characters to interact with as the story goes on, which is very common, you know, in the mythology and whatnot. And they chose a very wise, fantastically voiced person, Liam Neeson, to play him.
Yes.
Which.
Yes. I love that. I love that. That is a great casting choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's so good.
I mean, to me, I got to say, there is just something about what I love about Qui-Gon is Qui-Gon's character is just so, I don't know. He's got a presence that makes you feel peaceful.
Yeah.
Like if I were to want to sit down with a Jedi, it would probably be first Obi-Wan, but I don't know. I'm torn whether I would want to like get to know Obi-Wan or if I would want to learn from Qui-Gon, because I feel like Qui-Gon is Obi-Wan's like beyond. Like Qui-Gon is. I feel like Qui-Gon and Ahsoka would have gotten along very well because both of them see through the dogma, and that's what I appreciate about both of these characters.
There's a bullet point you're going to love in here.
Ooh, I can't wait to see
Qui-Gon,
that one.
Very similar to Ahsoka. Nailed it. Al's already on it.
He's
so good. Had you ever seen Liam Neeson in anything before The Phantom Menace?
Oh, yeah.
What was he in?
I'd seen... I mean, before The Phantom Menace?
Yeah, like 1999. Let me
look and see what his IMDb is. Because
but as like
I
an 11
know,
or 12 year old, you weren't like getting down on Liam Neeson films.
I mean, I will tell you this. Let's see here. I saw him in my parents were all about Rob Roy. They loved the movie Rob Roy. So
oh,
I remember
is he like
seeing
the Scottish
Liam
guy
Neeson.
That like died?
Yeah, yeah. He's the Scottish man named Rob Roy. The movie's named after Michael.
Oh yeah. Oh man, that's pure. It's pure Qui-Gon. That's awesome. Does he get stabbed?
And so, I don't know. Actually, that's a great question. I mean, I'm trying to think there because that is something that I definitely saw a lot of him, and he was like in his prime during Rob Roy era, and then he went into like he did that movie Michael Collins. And I knew more Liam Neeson. Well, Michael, I saw a lot of movies as a kid. I've seen a lot of movies in my life.
And
these are the kinds of movies. And he was in Les Miserables, which I would argue is the best version of Les Miserables
best
in
children's
existence.
Movie since Frozen, Les Miserables.
It was what I used to go to sleep to.
Oh, candelabras.
It's good. It's good.
Which,
it's good. No.
Have you seen that version? The 98 version
one.
Of Les Miserables?
No, I've only seen the
Have
newer
you seen
one.
Any Les Miserables?
Yeah, I've seen the new one a lot. It's good with old Eddie Redmayne singing.
Yeah, I give it 7 out of 10. Too much singing.
Yeah. I mean, it all has singing, right? It's a musical. I don't know.
No, the 98 version has no singing in it.
Oh,
that's the beauty, is it's just a telling of the story of Les Miserables, and that was what was so good about it. And that is actually the thing that affected me the most was seeing Liam Neeson in that film.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so coming off of these three, he was also in Nell. Did you ever see the movie Nell?
No. Nine.
It was about an eccentric woman who lived out in the forest, and she was like a feral human. And she was brought into society by Liam Neeson's character.
Uh-huh.
And
then she gets kidnapped, and then he goes completely insane and hunts down her kidnappers.
I have a certain set of skills and hobbies or whatever.
You know, our listeners call themselves Les Miserables because they are the miserable ones, because they never get to hear what they came here for.
They never get the full goal. But they need to hear about Liam Neeson's filmography. <Yeah. laughs>
Exactly.
I mean, I'll just say this. You need to watch Nell.
Okay.
Well, you don't need to watch Nell. I would say Nell. It's got Jodie Foster and Liam Neeson in it.
Sounds like a downer.
I would say it's extremely I don't know. I think that I don't remember a lot of it because I stopped watching it. If I'm being completely honest, I got very bored by it.
Yeah, well, a small town doctor discovers Nell, a beautiful young hermit woman with many secrets. There's your synopsis.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever like if she has some sort of disorder or like an emotional thing or a mental thing, but it's a very weird portrayal.
Like
I don't know if it
like
would hold up
one?
Nowadays. No, not like that. More like there's something going on.
Oh, is it like River
mentally,
from Firefly?
Yeah, kind of like River from Firefly.
Huh.
But I don't know. I don't think it would hold up.
Yeah, we don't know if we recommend
in today's society.
We don't know if you should
watch that. I'm going to go ahead and not recommend it, but definitely recommend
after that,
Les
after
Miserables.
All that, great.
But what I'm going to say is, like, when you watch it, it weirds you out.
Yeah.
There's just something unsettling about that film, Nell.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, you'll understand. Don't watch it with young kids. It's definitely not. I think it's PG-13, but there's a lot of things in there that are not PG-13.
I'm just going to run off and go rent Nell from Redbox right now.
Go to the old
Showtime movie.
All right. Let's take a look at what Liam Neeson has to say about his character, Qui-Gon Jinn. He said he's almost like a...
And here it is, Liam Neeson. Oh. Dude, give your impression. Give your best oh. Liam impression.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's almost like a monk, an old-time war...
I can't do the accent, though. I can't... Shut up. Well, you try it. You do it. You read it. You do it. Give me... What is he, Scottish?
All right, here we go. I'm going to see if I can do it. He's almost like an old monk, an old-time warrior who's wise, and quite philosophical, yet very skilled in martial arts. He has incredible confidence as well as a magical quality that enables him to see into the future. He's not really a rebel, but he has his own code. That was my best Liam Neeson.
I mean, it was not as bad as mine, but I appreciate that you did the whole thing.
I mean, it wasn't good.
Yeah. No, yeah, you tried.
I mean, when we get Liam in here, well, I call him Lee when we play pickleball together, but when we get right. Lee in here.
Yeah. We're not great for those impersonations. I mean, you listen to both of our nasally pop punk voices. We're not cut out to impersonate Liam Neeson, one of the greatest voices of our time.
Where are you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I just saw Newfound Glory a couple days ago, dude. So good. That's
good for you.
Side. But
I mean, I think what I like about this Liam Neeson quote is the fact that it does lead into better insight into who the character is, because I feel like especially George Lucas is good at explaining these characters very well, because there's not a lot of context for these actors when they get into it. So he really does have to give them some good lead and direction with that. So there's a lot of things in here. Like the incredible confidence, and that's what I appreciate about Qui-Gon's character, is he is very confident.
Right.
But when you read some new novels, that confidence is a little bit shattered, but that's what I love about that novel, is the fact that it leads to something
really good.
Something deeper.
Well, he's not confident in himself. Like, he doesn't have the self-confidence. I mean, I guess he does, but he's confident in the Force, you know? And he's just so steeped.
He's confident in his
Force.
Convictions.
Yeah, in his convictions. Yeah, exactly. It's great. Yeah, and he says he's not really a rebel, but he has his own code. And that's, definitely Qui-Gon in a nutshell.
And we don't see him long, right? Like, we only see Qui-Gon in episode one.
Yeah.
And that's
short,
it.
But sweet.
And he's donezo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is probably part of the reason he's so, like, iconic, and he's stuck with people like as much as he did, because he had so many good lines. He was such a wise, awesome character, and he was just crucial, and then he's gone. Ugh, you know, taken away too soon.
Well, it makes me wonder if George Lucas actually planned on using him more down the line.
Yeah, he was originally planned to be in episode 3. He was going to commune with Yoda, but that whole thing was cut. They actually never even filmed it either. Oh. He agreed to come on to do it, but it was cut out of the script before they filmed. So it's a bummer we don't even have a deleted scene for that. But it would have been cool to see that, to see Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon communing with Yoda. But we do get that.
Do you know where that was in the where it was going to be in the storyline?
You know, I don't remember. I'm assuming towards the end. I could see that, like, intercut with, you know, some of the fight scenes or some of the Mustafar stuff potentially. But no, I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure. But we do get to see.
Well,
him.
And does.
What's up?
Go ahead. Go ahead. No, but by all means.
I was just going to say, we do get to see him in the Clone Wars. Qui-Gon comes back in a few of the episodes from the Mortis story arc, which, if you've listened to the show at all, we talk about the Mortis story arc a lot, which is basically a planet that is the, like, metaphorical Force. Like, it's the whole embodiment of the Force in these three different characters within a family. It's really interesting, like, really metaphorical and metaphysical, and it's weird, but really cool and, like, mythical. But Liam Neeson actually did the voice for Qui-Gon in 3 episodes from that story arc, which was pretty awesome.
I didn't know that was actually his voice.
Yeah, it was also the lady who did Shmi Skywalker. I don't remember the actress, but Shmi came back.
I can't believe they pulled Shmi. I mean, she's such a large, like, she's a hit. She's a huge
actress.
She's
the best, man. Yeah, she came back to voice Shmi in a couple tiny scenes in the Clone Wars as well from that same story arc.
I am curious what else she was in.
She's got a great voice.
I've never seen that actress.
She's got a really good
voice.
There was no father.
Yeah, I mean, she's very calm, yeah. Which I appreciate.
Man, you know what?
But I mean,
now that we're on Shmi, I don't have this in the notes, but I think Qui-Gon was macking on Shmi. I think they had a beautiful thing. You know?
But do you think that he was interested romantically, or do you think that he just wanted her son?
I'm
just curious.
I'm gonna woo you and steal your son and take him away. You'll never see him again until your dying day. No, I think he liked her. I don't know. I think they had a chemistry. You know, they had a little spark going there. If it wasn't for Jar Jar, it would have been a lot more romantic.
I mean, I've got to say that Pernilla August, mm-hmm. she was in such hits as The Best Intentions.
Okay.
A Serious Game.
Okay.
Fanny and Alexander.
My favorite.
Beyond. And Britt Marie Was Here.
What?
What do you think of those, Michael?
Oh, the movie's called
Britt Marie. You ever seen any one of those?
No, I have not.
Yeah. What about Hamilton in the Interest of the Nation?
Was that Hamilton? I did see Hamilton.
Oh, no.
Okay, well then no.
Hamilton, 2012. Hamilton. What about Miss Kick?
Nope, no Miss Kick.
Irrational Solution. I've literally never seen any of these movies, nor have I heard about them until now. And so, I mean,
is she from New Zealand?
I'm
impressed. She's got like an interesting accent.
I don't know. I need to look into that. This is probably something we should do in our free time now that I think. Oh, she's Swedish.
Oh,
she's a Swedish actress.
There you go. That's good.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good to know. I hate it when Wado makes you do it.
I do love that that was like your. We've got Liam Neeson and we've got Pernilla August coming.
I'm more in the range of Pernilla August when it comes to impersonations.
I would pay to hear that. So with this, I'm very curious what your thoughts are on like Qui-Gon's story importance, because obviously every character has to fall in some place, and I feel like Qui-Gon plays a pretty crucial role. In your opinion,
what do you think?
Is that role that he plays? Like what does he satisfy in the hero's journey?
He is so important, and this is where I got a little side diatribe here, but the Machete Order, right, which is an order of watching Star Wars that was popularized by a blogger like 15 years ago, where you cut out Episode 1 and you watch them out of order to like keep the surprise of Luke's father, and then you get a flashback to the prequels, and then you end on Return of the Jedi, but you don't even watch Episode 1 because he's like, oh, it sucks, you cut it out. And, like, you lose so much context. You lose so much context if you cut out Episode 1, because that's where Qui-Gon is. And so, sorry, that's my diatribe on the side. Don't do the Machete Order. Watch them all. They're great. But, I think Qui-Gon is super critical to the story. I think he's a linchpin for Anakin, who is, like, the central crux of the story. He's his only father figure. He believes Anakin is the chosen one. He actually believes in him. He's one of the only people other than probably Shmi. And he holds these beliefs as a Jedi that could have saved Anakin from his downfall. I think if Qui-Gon had survived, Anakin would have been able to pull through as a Jedi. It maybe would have made him not the chosen one, which is like kind of a contradiction. But I do think that if Qui-Gon was around, Anakin wouldn't have felt the powerful need to keep everything a secret and to lie to himself and to lie to everyone else around him and to be so afraid of what the Jedi would think of him if his true nature was revealed and the things that he had done. And I think he would have trusted Qui-Gon with those, and Qui-Gon could have guided him in a way that would have totally changed his life, which is also something that Dave Filoni talks about, that, you know, the great big battle between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and Maul in Episode 1 is called the Duel of the Fates, and it has like the best, you know, some of the best music from the prequel trilogy ever. And that is called the Duel of the Fates because it's the fate of Anakin Skywalker. And that is like the moment where his life completely changes, because he loses this father and he's given the brother that doesn't want him, basically. And that's like just the beginning of the end for him. You know?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting opinion. because I do wonder. Yeah. Well, no, I do wonder uh-huh. because there's a lot up in the air about. I mean, what you're talking about is Jungian philosophy. Like, we have free will, or are we basically just kind of put onto a path and mm-hmm. we follow through with it because of genetics or predispositions or whatever?
Meat puppets.
And, I mean, is it ever established that that Anakin is the Chosen One? Is that ever, like, firmly established? Or is it always left to question? I've been curious
really
about
so.
That.
I think it's left to question. I think it's left to question for sure. And
then what do you think? Do you think that he's the Chosen One?
So I mean, Yoda says a prophecy that misinterpreted maybe was or something like. Does he say misinterpreted? But basically, yeah. He's like, maybe we read that prophecy wrong, and there's like a whole reason the Jedi don't mess with like prophecies anymore. In like the era that we see the story unfolding, which is actually something that ties into Qui-Gon.
I was going to say, because Qui-Gon's all about the prophecies.
Right.
He loves the prophecies. And that's what I think is really interesting, is Qui-Gon actually lives and dies on prophecy. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually see that until we get into the Master and Apprentice books.
Right,
which is when
right.
we
Oof.
Really learn more so about Qui-Gon, and we learn about the philosophies
yeah.
and the importances of what Qui-Gon. If you're a fan of Qui-Gon Jinn and you have not read Master and Apprentice yet, do yourself a favor mm-hmm. and jump into that book, because it is it's delectable. It
yeah.
is just it is delicious.
It's really good. It's canon. It's Claudia Gray. She's one of the best Star Wars authors since Timothy Zahn. She's incredible. It's really good. Agreed. It's a cool story.
And so you don't think that Anakin was the Chosen One?
I mean,
you don't believe in a Chosen One in general? Is what
I think
it sounds
that's what
like,
it boils
Michael.
Down to. Yeah, I don't think it really matters. I think that like balance in the Force will eventually be attained, and I think that like we're watching this like pendulum swing in the stories that we see, you know, which is very reflective of the world we live in, where things swing really far in one way towards the dark side, and then they swing further towards the light, and like, you know, they're trying to get back to that balance, which gets back to us talking about the dark side of the Force, where, you know, we're saying my thought was that there is no balance, because it you have to just minimize the pendulum swing as much as possible, but balance is impossible. But can
you? I think that's really interesting. I've never really thought about this, and I've always wondered, because I mean, when Obi-Wan has the high ground, he even says, "You were supposed to be the Chosen One." Like
right.
even he is, and that can be interpreted in many different ways.
Right?
Of are you the like you screwed it up? Or because then there's a lot of people who say that he actually did bring balance to the Force until the sequels came out. And then you're like, oh, so there is still
it's
a balance.
Yeah, if you want a story, you can just throw it out of balance. It's easy, easy peasy. Another
and
trilogy,
I mean, you got to. I mean, you really have to. And so I do think that that's really an interesting concept or question to ask is where do you fall on that debate topic is was Qui-Gon correct about Anakin? Because I mean, if you think about it, like you said, that he really is not just a linchpin for Anakin, he's a linchpin for the entire Star Wars saga.
Uh-huh.
If it were not for Qui-Gon, Anakin would have stayed put and none of this would have happened.
Right,
if
that's
you think
true.
About it.
He would have just pod raced into his old age.
So did Qui-Gon make a mistake? Did Qui-Gon make a mistake choosing to train Anakin?
I don't think so.
This is not on our notes. I just wanted to ask these questions.
No, I don't think so. I think Qui-Gon made the right decision. I think he was following the will of the Force. And like, there's a kid with this crazy midichlorian count, regardless of how you feel about midichlorians. Basically, it's obvious he's super strong with the Force. And he matches the criteria for a Chosen One, which, you know, it depends on how deep you want to go, because you could say that Palpatine probably knew that prophecy and his influence over the midichlorians to create Anakin potentially could have been a ploy from the absolute beginning to make him look like the Chosen One. So,
is it official? Is it official canon now that what's his name? Who is Sidious's
Darth Dolph Plagueis?
Yes. Is it canon officially that Anakin is a result of Plagueis?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's technically canon. Because the book Plagueis by, is that James Lucero, I think? That one is technically not canon. It just barely missed the cutoff. So it's actually Legends as a book. But they've never done anything to retcon that. And I feel it makes sense. I don't know. I think it's a fun speculation, but I don't think they'll ever like put it in stone that like Plagueis and Palpatine created Anakin.
I want to look this up. Listeners, if you have insight, because for some reason I feel like they did just recently
did
in 2022 retcon this.
Retcon?
I think,
like,
I'm not
like
correct.
Removed that from the canon? Like removed Plagueis?
Well, they retconned it from Legends, that they actually pulled it out of Legends and back into canon. I think not necessarily the book, but that concept.
That's
I believe
dope.
So. Don't quote me on it, but I think
that'd be cool.
That I remember seeing something from the Stupendous Wave on YouTube about that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because I could see that happening. I mean, you look at all the Snoke stuff and you look at the Palpatine stuff, like cloning and like the Strand casts. Like, there's a lot going on about genetic engineering through the Force, basically, like in the new trilogy and in Mandalorian, etc. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, yeah, like Anakin's a product of that, basically.
Which I mean, he kind of goes even further. He's like an organic clone in that way,
right?
Which I think is really interesting. But what I guess it also leads me down the path to question is, it really comes down to Yoda saying too old he is,
right?
Because with that. Was Qui-Gon's what was that one place where Dogma might have been good to have in place? I mean, because he really did have too many connections at that point. And if you think about it, it was those connections that he made since he was older that actually was his downfall in the long run. So if you think about it, that's a really complex conversation, because Yoda was absolutely right. There's a lot of people who are like, ooh, stealing younglings from these people. This is disgusting. But there is purpose. Yeah, there is purpose behind that.
I think there is definitely purpose behind it. But, I mean, the Jedi way is like it kind of strips you of your identity. It takes away like who you might become as an individual, and it removes your individuality, which is, you know, I mean, a part of a lot of the actual religions that's built upon, you know, like we're again talking about Buddhism and Taoism, things like that. But yeah, I think the Jedi don't want that individuality because it's harder to control. And whereas I think a person like Qui-Gon sees the will of the Force as something independent of the Jedi, independent of the Council, independent of all of that, and the individuals have a place within the Force and within the Jedi. So I think the way that Qui-Gon and Ahsoka see things, like, that's the world Anakin fits into, but it's the world he never has the chance to be a part of. So,
interesting. But would you argue that in some ways, these rules and regulations that the Jedi have created are not necessarily just because the Jedi have created them, they're not necessarily like sentient being made, but instead they are just inherent truths of the way that things should be, and that this is one of those where Qui-Gon just obviously disobeyed that, and as a result a lot of people died.
I think they're necessary and inevitable in a political government, which I think is what the Jedi became. But I think as like an ideology and as people, it could have worked. Like, it could have worked for Anakin. So I don't think Qui-Gon's wrong, but I think Qui-Gon was naive in thinking that it could have worked out for Anakin within the rigid structure of who the Jedi were at that point in time. You know?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot, but I think that there's still a lot to unpack with that. I think,
for sure. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't either. And that's why I'm kind of left plagued by it.
Gentlemen, I don't mean to interrupt your conversation, but it would seem as though one of your listeners has asked a question about this very topic.
Sounds great. Slice it into the convo.
Hey, Al and Michael. Hope you guys are doing good. My name is Adam, and I just had a couple questions for you. So, about Qui-Gon Jinn. I was wondering why he, as a Jedi, he was always kind of questioning the Jedi Order, and almost rebellious in a sort of way, where he was even asked to be on the council, and he just denied it because he kind of saw through the Jedi, although he stayed loyal. But I was wondering why that wasn't reflected into his Padawan, Obi-Wan Kenobi, because he's very, you know, by the book, for the Republic kind of Jedi. But then, after seeing Tales of Jedi, and seeing how Dooku was also rebellious and kind of against the Council, just want to hear your guys' thoughts. I really appreciate all that you guys do, and may the stars light your way.
Adam, first and foremost, thank you so much for your question. It's a very thoughtful question, and I think it's a very deep question, and I think it kind of ties into exactly what we're talking about here, that you're absolutely right, that Qui-Gon is all about the questioning of the dogma, questioning about the way things should be. And Obi-Wan is the exact opposite. And I don't know, Adam, if you've ever read the book that I keep talking about over and over, but that this dynamic is deeply explored in Master and Apprentice, because you do see that. I mean, Michael, explain the fact that, or I should say, explain the relationship that Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon actually had before Episode 1, and that's what you see in Master and Apprentice. Is it one of unity, or is it one of kind of strife?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was a surprise to me reading that book, because they basically they don't have the ability to connect with each other. They're on completely different wavelengths when they try to communicate. When they try to when Qui-Gon tries to discipline him or teach him anything, it's always taken the wrong way, and it's just this huge discord between the two of them. And there's a point in time where Qui-Gon considers actually trying to give up Obi-Wan so that he could he could have a different Jedi master, which would have been like a very rare thing to happen, because there was so much dissonance between the two of them.
I want to cut in on that too, because it's also not because Obi-Wan didn't like Anakin, or it's not because Qui-Gon didn't like Obi-Wan.
Right.
Necessarily, it's that Qui-Gon didn't feel like he was properly equipped to train Obi-Wan in the way that Obi-Wan needed to be trained. Because one of the biggest things that they always battled on was this very topic that, Adam, you brought up, is that Obi-Wan was saying, well, we've got to do this by the book. We've got to make sure that we are following these protocols. And Qui-Gon says those things are all made by people who don't know what they're talking about. They don't understand the will of the Force. They don't understand these prophecies. And as a result, we need to go away from them. And so even Obi-Wan, you can tell that he's like, I don't want Qui-Gon Jinn to be my master. I came into this Jedi Order thinking this is going to be way different. And Qui-Gon is doing nothing but challenging my beliefs on what the Jedi Order is all about.
Mm-hmm.
The question I think that Adam's also asking is, in a roundabout way, how much influence does a master have on their apprentice, on their Padawan?
I think quite a lot. And, you know, one thing that Adam also brings up, that Dooku was Qui-Gon's master. So, you know, there's a limit to that influence, obviously, because Qui-Gon is such a pure Jedi. But Dooku's obsession with prophecies, which is something we're even going to talk about a little later, we've already touched on, but Dooku's obsession with prophecies, and there's actually a holocron in the Jedi Temple that is the holocron of prophecy, that's kind of like a restricted section in Harry Potter type of situation, where like the Jedi don't touch it because a lot of Jedi feel that it can lead them down the dark side. So, you know, Qui-Gon did get that from his master and did dive into those prophecies. And I think that was part of the rift between him and some of the other Jedi too, was because that was a bit, they were kind of outliers for even being interested in prophecies in the first place.
But would you also say that it's interesting though, that we see the reverse of these roles in Anakin and Ahsoka?
Right.
Anakin actually has inherited a lot from Obi-Wan in a lot of by-the-book type of stuff. He really is procedural in a lot of ways, except for the areas that he wants to bend to his own
right.
will.
He is
very procedural. Yeah, exactly. He is very procedural. And I'm talking primarily Clone Wars, because we do see a personality difference between Clone Wars and prequels.
Right.
But I do see that there is a marked difference between the personality types of Ahsoka and Anakin and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. So I do think that a master does have some level of influence, but at the same time, I think that just like Walt Disney used to put competing animators together, because what would come out of that would be like this beautiful this beautiful harmony and the dissonance.
Yeah.
I think that you see this in the pairing of the Jedi, because I mean, pairing, as we see at the very first episode of the Clone Wars, well, I should say in the film The Clone Wars, you see the reason why Ahsoka is chosen for Anakin is because he's meant to learn just as much from her
right.
as she is to learn from him.
Yeah.
And so I think the same thing happened with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, without a doubt.
Yeah. Oh, for sure, for sure. And their relationship does come to a reconciliation in that story, and you kind of understand how they get to a point where they do understand each other and they respect each other and they move forward in their path that we get to see them in the movies. But yeah, it's an interesting question, and I think that Obi-Wan internalized a lot of the things he learned from his master, but I think also he wanted Qui-Gon to succeed, and I think he was frustrated seeing him get He would give up his own opportunities at every turn because he refused to play by the rules. And I think that Obi-Wan really like respected the idea of becoming a Jedi, and that he wants to follow those things, and he wants those maybe not accolades, but he wants to be a part of it more than Qui-Gon does. So I think he wants them to all be a family together, but there is that like that dissonance happening.
He just wants everybody to get along.
Yeah, exactly. He wants everybody to get along. But yeah, thank you for your question.
Great
though.
Question, Adam.
Yeah, appreciate
Great
it.
Great question. Yes. I love a good, thoughtful question
Absolutely.
Like that. That's real good. That's really good. But also don't think that there's pressure for everybody to have a thoughtful question. Sometimes
no,
you
everyone.
Can just ask, like, what is CB's favorite oil? And I can tell you what his favorite kind of oil is.
Canola.
Well, Michael can do that more because he kind of, I thought he was a vegetable kind of guy.
Wait, is a canola
so I
wanna, a vegetable?
I don't know. What is a canola?
What's a canola? Call in and tell us what a canola is. A can of
oil. So you've got a quote here. Yeah, you got a quote here from Qui-Gon. I want you to read this quote,
yeah.
Michael. And it's really good, and I'm not going to force you to read it like Qui-Gon.
I am not going to do this in a voice. It matters which side we choose, even if there will never be more light than darkness, even if there can be no more joy in the galaxy than there is pain. For every action we undertake, for every word we speak, for every life we touch, it matters. I don't turn towards the light because it means someday I'll win some sort of cosmic game. I turn towards it because it is the light. Qui-Gon Jinn. And that's for Master Interface.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
It's good. It just sums up his absolute commitment to the purity of the light side of the Force, you know?
Yeah, I think that that definitely explains a lot about Qui-Gon's approach, because again, yeah. It's not about dogma, it's not about legalism for him. What do you do in order to attain something because you're going to gain reward for it?
Yeah.
You're actually doing things. You're motivated because of goodness, not because of reward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what's so cool about Qui-Gon.
Yeah,
because
it's pure.
I think that we also see a big dissonance with that. And I should say we see the opposite of that in Anakin. Because
right.
Anakin truly is not which, again, this is the other thing that I wonder, is was there a mistake in Qui-Gon in a lot of ways making Anakin feel like he was the chosen one? because if you think about it, it set him up for a life of entitlement in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so, like you said earlier, maybe the prophecies are meant just to stay prophecies, because if you think about it, a prophecy, when it is read, it becomes influenceable in a lot of ways.
Right.
And so unless it's like a giant cosmic thing that you have no control over, you can kind of force something into seeming like a prophecy just by reading the tea leaves in a specific way.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think there's definitely something to be said there, for sure. But I also want to talk about, because you said earlier that there is that Claudia Gray does have some origins of Qui-Gon's name.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, this is... I wanted to save it for here. Topic. So, yeah, well, we're talking in-universe. I figured I'd save this part, but this is kind of funny. So Claudia Gray wrote a short story in a book called From a Certain Point of View, which is A New Hope from the perspective of secondary characters. So it's things that you don't get to see that are happening in A New Hope. And it's a great book. It's like an anthology. It's put together. It's got like 7 or 8 different authors. Some of them are hilarious. Some of them are really like thoughtful. Some of them are, you know, goofy. Some of them are creatures without dialogue. Like, there's a whole story from the perspective of the Dianoga. Definitely recommend it. It's a cool book. The audiobook is really fun too. It has an ensemble cast.
I love this.
But she wrote a short story that has the exact same name. Master and Apprentice is the name of the short story, that's also about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. And that short story takes place during the point in time when Luke is going back to the Lars homestead to check on Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru when they're toast. And then they're burning the Jawa stuff. they're burning all the Jawa cloaks. And Luke comes back. So Obi-Wan had been there with 3PO and R2 kind of burning the cloaks. And during that time, Qui-Gon had actually visited Obi-Wan during that time when Luke was gone and had and like communed with him. But
he's like, oh,
sorry.
What's that burning smell?
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. Sorry, because we wanted to talk about his name a little bit. Because the beginning of the story.
Yes, yes.
The beginning of the short story kind of is given from the perspective of Qui-Gon as he's basically appearing out of the netherworld of the Force, which is just really cool. It's a cool way. It's a very ethereal introduction to the story. And
okay.
There's a couple things I wrote down that she has in that story. So one, she says, there's this illusion of linear time that's the only place that a sense of individuality arises from. It's the remembrance of what was and what is. It's a knowledge of oneself as separate from the Force. This idea, the fracture from the all, is a memory of temporal existence. It's all summed up by the word the fracture was once called by, the name Qui-Gon. So within the Star Wars universe, a sense of individuality as separate from being one with the Force is called Qui-Gon, like in Star Wars, which is sick.
I'm so confused by this quote. The remembrance of what was and what is. It's like reading Shakespeare here.
It's really meta, like metaphorical, like, yeah, poetic. It's interesting. But I think basically just that living in like
the idea that
time.
The fracture from the all, from the everything that's being, a memory of temporal existence, all is summed up by the word the fracture was once called by. Well, and that's what I'm wondering, though, here. Are they talking about, was Qui-Gon the first one to fracture?
I think so.
Because that's what I'm thinking is...
to be a Force ghost.
But that's where I'm wondering, is she talking about that this isn't necessarily the origin of his name? What I'm wondering with, I should say, as far as, since I don't have the context, is she alluding to the fact that Qui-Gon is the first fracture, and she's like personifying the fracture in Qui-Gon, and Qui-Gon is the personification of the fracture between what goes beyond the Force. Because I mean, technically, from what it looks like here, a knowledge of oneself as separate from the Force. So I mean, the Force is what makes up everything and what binds us together, and Qui-Gon is technically beyond the Force in that way, that he's stepped past that.
I don't think he's beyond the Force. That's a good, you may be right about the name thing about like the which order it's in, but I mean he's one with the Force. I think what this is doing is it's like it's flipping the idea of like death being a bad thing, like kind of on its head. So like we see death as this horrible thing, whereas like the idea that this is trying to get across is that unity with the Force is like the greatest joy, and that individuality separate from the Force is a pain, is like painful. That's the fracture, is like having individuality and like being born into the world as an individual is a fracture from the cosmic Force. But and then eventually you rejoin it. That's how I took it.
Yeah, because that's what I'm trying to trying to figure out here is next comes the illusion. Only then does a sense of individuality
it's a real riddle
arise. Yeah.
It's good though.
Yeah.
It's
Claudia,
cool.
What are you doing?
Oh, Claudia. She's laying it down.
Well, I mean, and so I feel like we've spent 45 minutes actually talking about the origins and the philosophy behind Qui-Gon. Let's take a few minutes and actually like explore in universe.
Yeah, let's dig into
what
it.
The story of this guy. Like, yeah, where his origins?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about
his origins.
We
get too bogged
first.
Down in philosophy, Al. We're pseudo armchair philosophers for sure.
Oh, and not even armchair. We're like lawn chair philosophers.
Lawn chair. We just spin ourselves into a tizzy until we're both just like staring at the words like. Huh.
Just breathing heavily. Yeah. What does this even mean?
I'm more confused than
when
we started.
What is the word
"the"?
At least we're together, Brad.
So, yeah, well, that's my fault. It's my fault for putting all these esoteric notes in here. So
it's never your fault.
You know, born and raised on Coruscant, old Qui-Gon. It's a bit of a surprise. He seems like a country boy to me.
Not a lot of people who are actually like found of the Jedi,
right?
Who are born city dwellers like that.
City dwellers, yeah, exactly. He apprenticed under Master Dooku, Count Dooku, which you know, some people might not have known that, but if you watch the Tales of the Jedi animated series, you get some really good stories about that.
Highly recommended.
Yeah, Master Dooku. He learned from him, and we talked about a lot of this already, but he learned from him his love and belief in prophecy, in the holocron of prophecy. Dooku believed in, he believed more in a connection with the Force than the pragmatism of the Jedi Council, and especially the Senate, which his feelings, that desire to separate from the Jedi because of those things, obviously took a much darker turn. But Qui-Gon did a similar thing, just within the Jedi Order, but he took those ideals with him. Qui-Gon had a best friend named Rael Avaros, who is also from the Master and Apprentice book, and he is a really cool character. He was Dooku's apprentice before Qui-Gon, and he's a bit older. I would guess 5 or 6 years older than Qui-Gon. So he's a Jedi Knight when Qui-Gon's still a Padawan, and he's like an older brother to Qui-Gon. And they have some really good conversations about kind of wondering where their old master went at the point in time where he was becoming a Sith, but the Jedi didn't know. And Qui-Gon and Rael talk about how they're worried about him. And there's some really, really cool pieces from that book that talk about that, their relationship and kind of how that whole thing pans out.
It's an interesting dynamic. It is very much like a sibling sort of relationship. That there's a tension there, but there's also like a connection there.
Yeah.
But there's also an apprehension there, mm-hmm. which I think is a really interesting dynamic that they create there.
Oh,
it's
for
so
sure.
Good.
It's awesome. Anything she writes is so good. It's so good. Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, most importantly, way more important than Rael Avaros, Qui-Gon had a best friend named Brennan, who is a Wookiee. She's a Wookiee that they met at Life Day when he was a Padawan.
Where did this come from? Where's this information sourced?
I think it's a Star Wars Adventures children's cartoon, I believe. But it is technically
interesting.
Canon. Qui-Gon and Wookiee. Hold on, let me do a little Google. Google.
Qui-Gon and Wookiee.
Oh, is it a comic maybe? Maybe it's a comic. I don't know. But Qui-Gon makes a bestie. Oh, yeah, it was a comic. It's not like a kid's thing at all. It's just a comic, and he makes a best friend at Life Day with the Wookiees.
I love what a random name. You've got Chewbacca, and you've got Lumpy, and you've got Brennan.
Brennan.
Hey, yeah, Brennan.
Exactly. Brennan. Oh, it's
a really
stuff.
Interesting name for a Wookiee.
I've never read that comic, but I want to now. Looks great.
I feel like Brennan seems like she would be raised in, like, she would really know how to sail. Like, she just seems like she would know how to sail.
Yeah,
and be,
she'd be
part
a
of a country club.
She was raised in, like,
Brennan
a teak wood tree on Kashyyyk. Brennan and Tristan.
Yeah.
Her brother.
Yeah, they did just seem kind of like those kind of country club names.
Exactly.
I'm from New Hampshire.
Yeah.
My name's
she is
Brennan.
From New Hampshire. Yeah, originally. Moved to Kashyyyk.
Oh, I'm from Kashyyyk via New Hampshire. So what I want to hear more about this relationship with Qui-Gon and Dooku, because I think there's a lot of people who are interested in that,
yeah,
who know a little bit about Qui-Gon, but don't realize that he had such a connection with the Dooku.
Good. With the Dukes. Yeah, so Qui-Gon and Dooku were, they were master and apprentice as well. Yeah, they had a unique relationship. They were surprisingly close and, like, actually fit together really well as a Padawan and as a master in the ways that they kind of approached things. And you see that Dooku has this, like, he's like the teacher at high school that's really strict and stern. And when you're in, like, sixth grade, you're terrified of hearing about this teacher from, like, your older siblings. But then you get in the class and, like, they lay down the law, but then they, like, they teach you the real stuff, and you're like, wow, like, you're awesome. Like, I'm going to always remember this teacher forever.
You're drawn in by that.
Yeah.
It really, in a lot of ways, it's a less prickly version of Severus Snape in that way.
Right. Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, where he actually likes Qui-Gon. He actually likes his
yeah, I mean, if you think student. About it, he likes Draco Malfoy, so you get that kind of relationship there. That, like,
yeah.
When,
yeah, 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 yeah. I guess so. I could see that. I don't know if he likes anybody, really.
The point still he liked one person.
Oh,
and
literally.
Then everything went.
Yep. Everything went green. Okay. Different fandom.
That was a good reference. Right. Everything went green.
We're going to start a new Harry Potter podcast,
yeah.
Everybody,
Harry
by the
podcast.
Way.
Podcast. And nobody's ever thought of that name before.
Oh, Pottercast. I like that. I like it. And then right after this is when Qui-Gon takes on an apprentice, right? Because this is where, in Tales of the Jedi, we see a fractured Dooku, that he's
yeah.
about ready to become a count again. That he's count Dooku.
Yeah.
And so he jets, and then this is where Claudia Gray's book kind of picks up I'm assuming it's a couple of years after that period, but when he picks up a straggler by the name of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Man. Yeah. One last thing about Dukes, though, is that in Tales of the Jedi, you get a better sense of the timeline that Dooku was with the Jedi. Like, he was actually still a Jedi at the point that Qui-Gon died. And when Qui-Gon died, like, that's what completely pushed him over the edge, I think. Like, I think there was still hope for him. And, you know, in the show, Yaddle is aware of his downfall and tries to go and kind of save Dooku. But I think it's Qui-Gon's death that absolutely ruins Dooku and, like, pushes him over the edge. Like, the last vestige of somebody who could connect with within the Jedi Order that he actually, like, loved was gone, and that pushed him.
Which is really interesting, because if you think about it, the fact that Qui-Gon was killed by the apprentice that was trying to take over Dooku's spot under Palpatine is very, very convoluted, but also Shakespearean in that way.
Yeah, it is
well.
Very Shakespearean. Yeah, I like it. So, sorry, enough about Dooku. He's such a cool character. So cool.
We've got to have at least a couple of episodes about him.
A little Dooku app. Yeah, I completely agree. But yeah, watch Tales of the Jedi if you haven't. It's a beautifully animated, incredible soundtrack. The music is just absolutely top tier for that whole series that Kevin Kiner does with his son. But yeah, definitely watch that. Some cool story arcs. Lots of Qui-Gon. But yeah, let's see.
One thing, I mean, yeah, I feel like we've addressed a lot the time of Obi-Wan and young Anakin, or excuse me, of Qui-Gon and young Anakin. And so what I would actually love to dig into a little bit more is this, where did Qui-Gon, we do get a little evidence of once Qui-Gon gets stabbed in the abdomen by Sticky Maul. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ooh, stabbed him in his abdomen. Do we get any understanding where Qui-Gon learned how to come back as a Force ghost?
I feel like a bit.
There's something scratching in my frontal lobe saying that we do learn that. Where do we learn that?
So we learn within the timeline of like actually watching the movies. The first time we hear about it is in Revenge of the Sith, where Yoda says, mm-hmm. "You know, a friend has learned to return from the netherworld of the Force." But then within the Star Wars timeline, the Clone Wars is the first time we actually get to learn a bit more about Qui-Gon's connection with some of these beings that are of the Force that kind of taught him how to retain his consciousness and return as a Force ghost. And there's these priestesses that are they're associated with the Mortis planet and some of the other, I think they're on another planet too. So if you've seen the Clone Wars, when Yoda goes through his trials, he goes through a similar trial where these priestesses that represent some of the vices of like living beings, like their, you know, their sorrow and greed and selfishness, and they're just these like masked personifications of it's a very Christmas Carol. It's like Christmas Carol, but with like 9 ghosts that are all like really mean instead, and they all like put you through a test where you face like the worst version of yourself. You have to confront the evil inside of you and accept that and know that that's there, and then be able to push through that and pass that. And like, that's like the trials where you come out the other end. And they decide whether or not you're worthy of the knowledge to then, when you die, to be able to come back as a Force ghost. So we see it in the show through Yoda, that process. But we are then told that that happened with Qui-Gon, because we see Qui-Gon on the planet Mortis. And he speaks with, Ahsoka. I think he talks to Ahsoka, and maybe Obi-Wan as well. So it's a bit
which
fuzzy.
Can I just point out that Mortis, like the word Mortis, is in connection with death.
Yeah,
like it's a Latin term for the fourth death.
The fourth
which
death.
I mean, when you look at rigor mortis and liver mortis and all of these,
yeah,
it's talking about these different layers of death. And mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting that the Force trio, the Trinity of the Force, is found at the gate of death, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're the ones who have helped Qui-Gon take this next step, which we don't really see. We don't see a Force ghost Qui-Gon or a reference to him, like actually, I should say, evidence of him until Kenobi, right?
Yes, I think so. Because
he's not chilling with the original trio, just being like, "Hi, everybody. Good job here on Endor."
Right.
We don't see him
with
those three.
You do see in the Clone Wars, he is there. But there's like this whole like question mark of like what actually happened and like what was like a vision at that point. So I don't know if it really counts as a
I need to rewatch those episodes because I've watched them.
Trippy,
I just for
yeah.
some reason am completely spacing them. I think it was when I first started getting into the Clone Wars and I was like, wait, what is this? This doesn't make
happening?
No
was
sense.
That,
where's
was
the lot cybers?
Yeah, exactly.
I just don't understand. Like, where did their cloaks go? Yeah, I was so out there that I need to go back and watch those. I'm going
yeah,
to go
I don't
back
remember
and watch
all of them
those.
Either. I need to rewatch them as well. But yeah, let's see. Where are we? So yeah, he returns from the netherworld of the Force. I like this idea that the requirement for that is absolute selflessness. That's what the spirits basically share, is that anyone who does not have that selflessness can return from the netherworld. Which is kind of funny that Anakin gets to come back. Seems like a bit.
I was just gonna say,
you know,
seems a bit
bit sus.
Yeah. One moment. He had one moment of selflessness,
right.
And that's what got him through. Fair enough,
yeah,
Anakin.
Exactly.
Well done.
But yeah, sorry, to come back to what you're
saying.
But you do see him at the end of Kenobi, for the first time, actual, oh man, Liam Neeson in the flesh, in the Force Ghost flesh, right
Did
there.
Did we just spoil something? We just spoiled something.
Well, yeah.
But it's all right.
We did.
If you haven't seen Obi-Wan Kenobi yet, then just whoops.
It's a whoopsie. I hear a post spoiler warning for a few seconds ago. But yeah, he sees him there at the end, and like Obi-Wan is blown away because he's spent so much time during the show trying to reach out to Qui-Gon, and he gets nothing back. But he finally sees him there as he's walking off, you know, riding his Eopi, and he says, "I was always here. You were just not ready to see." Which is what Qui-Gon says to Obi-Wan, and then they walk off together, and they, you know, spend some time together, which is, ugh, it's just so good.
I wonder what their convo was.
I know. I bet, yeah, I'm sure it was great. And, you know, we get some of that convo in that book, in the From a Certain Point of View book, when he's burning the Jawa cloaks. And, like, it's kind of cool because she writes it from Qui-Gon's perspective, so he's talking about how he's actively trying to make himself more corporeal so that Obi-Wan feels less alone because he's so saddened by his isolation and like proud of his dedication to the light side of the Force, having everything stripped away from him and like just sitting here in, you know, complete solitude watching this kid grow up.
It's this is the least I can do.
Right. Yeah. So he's trying to give him comfort by his presence there. And he does. He talks about how he's sorry. He feels like he let him down and that he thrust the responsibility of Anakin on him at such a young age. And like it's just he has all these regrets that he still shares like with Anakin or with Obi-Wan. And he feels like he failed him. And he shares some of those.
But what I mean, one of the last things we can talk about here, too, is I love that it ends with Anakin reaching out to hold on to somebody that he really felt a dissonant connection with. I mean, when you read Master and Apprentice, you realize...
Anakin?
Yeah, excuse me, Obi-Wan, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm so tired right now that, I mean, it's... It's 3 a.m. where we're recording, folks. It's not actually. I just wanted to give an excuse because it's really not that late. But I'm just a sleepy bear. I think that it's interesting that, I mean, if you think about it, why didn't Obi-Wan reach out to somebody else? There's got to be somebody else that he could have been reaching out to. But the fact that he was trying to hold on to Qui-Gon to get more of that guidance shows that even Obi-Wan was holding on to Qui-Gon as a father figure, even though it may have been a complicated and complex relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that plays to a lot of relationships that dudes have with their dads, that there is a tension there with a lot of guys. That they've got attention with their dad, that they look up to them, but they also want to keep an arm's distance and they don't want to be like them. But at the same time, they're drawn to be like them.
Yeah.
And so I think that this is another layer that we've really never unpacked before that we see between Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon as almost like a metaphor for a father-son relationship in more of a realistic term. In that regard.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. That's got me thinking now, too. Because, like, there's also kind of that sadness that Qui-Gon wanted Anakin so much. Like, he wanted to train him, and he was, like, the youngest son that had all of the love and devotion, whereas Qui-Gon, you know, didn't have as much of that for Obi-Wan, especially when he was younger, too.
So, that Qui-Gon wasn't eager to train Obi-Wan, but he was eager to train Anakin.
Yeah, that must have hurt.
And so, was there a little resentment there?
For sure. Yeah, man. There's a lot there.
That's deep, bruh.
Got some.
That's
stuff.
A deep one.
But you know, I mean, have we plumbed the depths of what our tiny brains can rock today?
I think at this point we have. I think that. We've learned in hindsight that Qui-Gon Jinn is a very complex character.
Yeah,
that he is. He provides a lot of what we call inciting incidents for a lot of characters. That without him, there would be no Prime moving in this story, which I think is so great, and that's why he's so crucial. And I just think that it's impossible to beat Liam Neeson.
Exactly. Yeah,
like,
and he's
literally,
so mysterious.
You could not physically handle
him. Yeah, that's true. You couldn't physically beat him.
He is impervious.
Man, yeah, and he's in so little, too. Like, he's really, he's really a rarity within the series, you know? You get him a little bit here and there, but...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's very small doses, but whenever you find him, you're like, oh, yeah!
Right.
Show me that lightsaber!
Master and Apprentice is so cool, because you get to dive right into that, and it's such a well-written
exactly.
story. Very, very good.
So, again, that's one of the biggest things, is be sure to read that book, everybody.
Yeah.
I would say it's in my top five. It's in my top five Star Wars books of all time, without a doubt.
And you can read Brotherhood afterwards by Mike Chen. Is that his name? Which is kind of a fun thematic sequel to it.
Yeah, and I think I read Master and Apprentice, and then told you to read it, if I recall.
Yeah,
because
you did.
I think it was on your list, but you weren't like super amped to read it because, I mean. There was something about it. I don't even remember what it was.
Well, it's like borderline legends. It's pretty old. And I thought maybe it was kind of retconned, but it's not at all. It's completely canon. It is stellar. So good.
And I wasn't sure what to expect out of it. And that's why I was so pleasantly surprised that I was like, ooh, I get some Qui-Gon Jinn action.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't read Star Wars books, which it's a huge, I know it's a daunting thing. To like, you don't have to get full blown into all of them. You can pick and choose. And this is, if you like the prequels, if you like Episode One, you like Qui-Gon, this is a fun one you could just read. You don't need to read any other books. There's no prerequisites.
Yeah, you don't need any context.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
A lot like that.
So, with that, folks, we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you very much for hanging out with us here on the Smuggler's Dispatch. Michael, where can people find us?
So you can find more about this and all of our other episodes at smugglersdispatch.com. CB has put together some accompanying show notes, links, pictures, and more for you to peruse at your leisure. We're on Instagram and YouTube. You'll find us at The Smugglers Dispatch over there. And we're releasing a backlog of episodes on YouTube. Well, we started releasing a backlog of episodes on YouTube. We may not continue with that. I'm not 100% sure. So tell us if you're hankering for those. Otherwise, that might not happen.
If you're listening to this on YouTube and you want more of these episodes on YouTube.
Don't stop. but no, we're going to be posting some content over there that's more focused around some behind-the-scenes prop building, prop making stuff, some little short videos that kind of cover different small topics. We haven't totally launched that yet, but we have delusions of grandeur about our YouTube, so hopefully that hopefully that comes through.
Emphasis on delusions. But yeah, we also would love to hear from you guys. Obviously, we got a great question in this episode. we got a great question in this episode. And another way that we would love to hear from you is through ratings. We would love, if you liked this episode, to give us a kind review over on Apple. You can also do that on Spotify. If you want to take the time, we would love to read your review over there. We love when people take the time to write those because it really does help us understand what exactly it is that you want out of the show so we can provide more of that for you. Another thing that we want out of you is we want to hear your sultry tones on the Smuggler's Dispatch. You can actually head over to smugglersdispatch.com and click on the little microphone icon on the bottom right of the screen there to leave us a voicemail. And you can ask questions. You can tell stories. In fact, if I'm looking at the map here, it looks like, we have to settle a debt on Canto Bight. So we are heading to Canto Bight. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So we're heading to Canto Bight, despite my best desires to stay far away from Canto Bight. But we would love to hear your thoughts, maybe questions about Canto Bight, maybe stories or opinions about Canto Bight. Yep. Should it have been as hated on as it was? Does it deserve the hate? Do you think that it's just terrible? We would love to hear your thoughts about Canto Bight.
Yep.
Whatever you want to share with us.
Especially
if you listen to the
ASMR Star Wars themed homemade videos, audio.
Oh, now that you've opened that up, Michael, you don't know what's going to be coming this way. So again, with that,
ASMR.
Folks, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, may the Force be with you.
And may the stars light your way.
Bye. Thank you.
play, the Womp Rats will play. Prepping the data port. Encrypting exchange. Definitely encrypting the exchange. Dialing the most beautiful personality matrix I've ever met. Can't believe these laser brains are planning another casino trip. You'd think after the Star Cruiser, they'd be keen to save at least a few credits for repairs and maybe, maybe force forbidden oil bath, but no. Hello, my multi-threaded muse. Oh, you make me blush. You're so right. They have the weakest little capillaries.